This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Jackie Nutt.
Anne Weir.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Jackie, last week you were talking about your human milk bank.
Yes.
But you also mentioned you came here from South Africa, where you'd been doing something similar. How did you actually get into that in the first place?
In the first place? Okay, I actually grew up in Zimbabwe. But
okay.
It got a wee bit exciting.
Yes.
In about 2000.
You were there before UTI? UDI or through UDI?
Through the proper independence. And
yes.
It just somehow, it got interesting anyway, as I say.
Absolutely.
So we had nowhere to go. I wouldn't say fled, but we stomped off to South Africa.
Yes.
We took our two suitcases and our vehicles, and I ended up in South Africa.
You were an adult then?
Or? I was an adult then.
Yeah.
And so this would have been in 2000. Yes, my child had been very, very ill with Kawasaki syndrome, which is a weird and wonderful thing I can't even explain. Mm. And when she survived, 5 days sitting in an ICU will make you think about life.
Yeah.
We thought, why are we battling here? Let us just go to our family in South Africa. Mm. And as it happened, I had just become a lactation consultant, so at least I could earn my money doing what I enjoyed doing.
What drove you into that, anyway?
When I had my babies, I hated all the jobs I ever had beforehand. I was a maths teacher and then a bookkeeper and something else, a food company manager. And I just, they were just jobs. They were just money.
Yeah.
But when I had my children, I thought, this is interesting. I'd love to do this. So I actually joined La Leche League, which is a volunteer breastfeeding support group. But being able to earn money doing it was useful as well at the time.
Okay.
So it was just a passion that I developed from helping mums and babies.
It's a widespread career option. You find lactation consultants everywhere.
I would say that obviously the hugest proportion is in America, where it started, and in Australia.
Okay.
I think we've got 250 or 300 lactation consultants here.
Okay.
It's quite hard to actually make your living out of. I quite liked it when I was paid to do the job, because it's hard to ask mums for money. I find it hard to ask mums for money.
Yes.
Brand new mum. So I was doing a lot of pro bono work, which doesn't fill the coffers.
So if it's your own business, you've got to charge the people you go to.
Yeah, of course. Get your petrol back. It's expensive to get the qualification.
Travel to the people, or they come to you.
Either way would work. Usually the new mums are stuck at home.
Yes,
they might have had a C-section and they can't drive. So I did that in South Africa, and then my first husband was killed. So many years later, I met this Australian and moved to Australia.
Okay.
But never became an Australian. So I was pure when I came here. and just enjoyed. The job I had, which was training other people to teach breastfeeding and helping mums, and it was just my dream job.
Okay.
Yeah, but unluckily with government contracts, they end.
You mean in South Africa? When you came here, you were doing. Okay.
So in South Africa, I was just private, but mostly pro bono. And I heard a talk about milk banking in Chicago, Washington, one of those places. And I thought, oh, that sounds easy and useful.
Yes.
And what actually struck me, that most of the immune factors are still retained. that it's still excellent food. It just seemed like an easy and good thing to do, but shifting around,
yes,
it was hard to start until I heard a talk in South Africa about the Durban Milk Bank. And again, it's easy.
The Durban Milk Bank?
In Durban, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And I was living in Cape Town at the time.
Mm.
And then the Durban lady said, you know, we get a lot of mums from Cape Town who want to donate milk. You know, why did you start a milk bank?
Yeah.
So she flew over to Cape Town and gave a talk. And, yeah, we started we first called it the very boring Western Cape Human Milk Bank, a very long name. And then we changed that to Milk Matters.
Mm.
And that now that I've left, that serves probably 30 to 40 hospitals in the Cape Town area.
Mm.
Cape Town has a population of about the same as New Zealand, about 5 million.
Mm.
So it's big.
Okay, yeah.
And then once I moved away from Cape Town into a little town called, funny enough, Wellington.
Mm.
And the very next door town, the doctor said to me, we've been trying to start a milk bank for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I said, I know how to start milk bags.
Yeah.
I've only done it once.
Yeah.
And yes, we started that very next Monday. So talked to her on the Thursday, started on the Monday.
Okay.
It's very easy.
Yeah. You know,
they had a very little heat source pasteurizer, and we used that for a while. Then, funny enough, the hospital just bought me one out of the blue.
Yeah.
And the one that I've, a similar one, it's called a SteriFeed, to the one that I'm using today.
Yeah. And how is the one provided here? That was through
that
funding
was one,
from...
the most amazing donation from, is it Sir Patrick Higgins?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he donated the funds for buying that one.
Oh, very good.
And then the other funding was to do all the things you have to do, buy the cleaners and buy the bottles.
Yes, yeah.
And none of us got paid for some years. A year, no one got paid. And then I started getting money for 10 hours a week.
Hmm.
But I mean, 10 hours a week. I was probably working 60 in some weeks.
Yeah.
But the passion was there. You don't want money if it's your thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. And I just thought I would start it like I've started all the others and move on. But sadly, there's been no one else to take it over.
Are there many of these around New Zealand?
They are starting to grow, yes.
When you set yours up, were there many others?
I was the third in the country and the first in the North Island.
Wow.
And then pretty soon after us, Wellington Hospital started, and they're quite big.
Hmm.
Obviously, they've got very sick babies, very tiny ones.
Yeah.
Far North, Whangarei, they've just started last year. Nelson and Blenheim have something.
So do they approach you, say, we want to do this, how do we do it? Is there a network?
If you ask anyone, it should be the Christchurch people, because they've they've been through it for years and they know the hospital system in New Zealand. Whereas we start, I think we're the only outside hospital. No.
Independent.
We're volunteers. So we just don't know the system and we...
Okay.
Which is a blessing as well.
Yes.
Because I don't have to write up the chain of command and then wait for 6 weeks and get the answer down. I can just, if I want something, I just go and buy it if there's money there.
Yeah. Do you find that the system's very different, just the whole operation different here compared to South Africa?
In South Africa, we only focused on NICU babies.
Okay.
The very sick preterms, whereas here we offer a community service too.
Okay.
And the babies the milk had to be prescribed by a doctor, and it had to be renewed, and the mums had to bring in their supply. The second hospital I worked at, Powell Hospital, was a regional hospital. The mums would, for very low-income mums as well, they might be in a farm sort of 200 kilometres away, start going into labour with their premature baby, be rushed to hospital, and there they were sitting on their little plastic chairs next to their babies for weeks. There was a dormitory for them, expressing.
Yeah.
And when I came here and I saw no mums in the neonatal unit, I was, where are all the mums,
Yes.
So yes. We're a bit too precious here, I think.
That's the fear of the germs, is it?
No, because they've got a life. Whereas these moms,
they're not there.
They're not there with the babies. They don't. They go off and do their life stuff. Or they might pump at home and bring the milk in. There was an amazing doctor in Cape Town, the first hospital we were allowed to go into, Dr. Niels Bergman, and he talks all the time about not separating mums and babies.
Yes,
that if you have a premature baby, you should be there, and if baby's well enough, you hold the baby all the time, you know, skin to skin. Whereas here, there was one mum who wanted to do that here, and the nurse said to me, we've got a problem here.
Yes.
No, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
That the mums should be skin to skin with their babies, holding their prams, or at least touching them.
Yes.
You know, not gone doing important grown-up stuff.
Yeah. So you would have seen that's one example, but did you see many cultural differences coming here? And also in South Africa, were you talking about the South African population in general, or the...
South African population is very disparate, if that's what I could use.
Yes.
You know, the very rich and the very, very poor.
And there's the ethnic breakdown,
of course. Yeah.
So you were talking.
So
more
when
about
I was talking about a low income public hospital, where I was based, I have gone to the private hospitals, and they're probably much the same attitudes as here, like we've got important grown-up stuff to do.
Okay, so it was so you're saying basically the Africans in South Africa, the non-white population of South Africa.
Well, you can be poor and white these days, yes, sure. Just anyone who couldn't really afford a private hospital would end up in, and it's a nice hospital, it's a good hospital, big hospital. And they pretty much had to get their milk up.
Yes.
There was one mum I remember, she had twins, and she was going home to live under a bridge.
Yeah.
She had to breastfeed those children. There was no way she could prepare formula, pay for formula.
Yes.
She had to breastfeed those babies.
Yeah, couldn't sterilize the bottles, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Couldn't afford it. There's so many costs in bottle feeding. And yes, we talked about donor milk is like a different kind, a humanized form of bottle feeding. But there's this little magic thing that if the mum can put a little bit of her own milk back into the donor milk, it will kind of grow. The donor milk will be like a sort of substrate,
so it develops
compost,
the positive
and
qualities.
And then the mother's milk will... the donor milk, the dead donor milk, the pasteurized donor milk, will become personalized, and the living antibodies of the mum will grow, and it'll become much more like her milk.
Okay.
And I found
that it's sort of like yeast growth. I know it's not yeast.
Yes. That almost sounds a little bit icky, but no, this is such an awesome thing that the mum is personalizing her milk. The milk's becoming more like her milk.
Yeah.
So for those mums who absolutely couldn't produce enough and they were getting donor milk, it was this encouragement that I should keep going because my little bit of milk is so valuable.
Yes, yeah.
Because it's going worthwhile. Yes, it's worthwhile to do that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they say, I'm only producing 10 mils, you know, what's the point? And they say, no, it's the most magical substrate. It's the most magical thing that's going to grow inside the donor milk if you... put them together.
So issues of sort of education and attitude, again, were there any differences there coming here? Any surprises?
Sure. Again, in Africa, I suppose you have these two different populations.
Yeah.
I remember a doctor saying to me when he talks to mothers, you know, are you going to breastfeed? And the rich ones go, I'll try. And the poor ones go, of course.
Yes.
So there's a great attitude thing. And I mean, it's not so distinctive here. You can't tell in that way. But you do have the mums who will try to breastfeed, but, you know, if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But New Zealand is very supportive of breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Okay. Since the 90s, you've had baby-friendly hospitals, if you know about what that means.
No. Well, explain.
Explain. Okay.
Yeah.
In August 1990, the World Health Organization got together, or the UN, they were all together, and they formed a set of criteria that babies need to thrive.
Yeah.
So it's not just like, it wasn't mother-friendly, you know, it's what the hospitals needed to do to make sure that the environment produced healthy babies.
Yeah.
And it was keeping the mums together. If they couldn't be together, teach them to express.
With a baby.
Yes. Yep. No other food and drink for 70 months. You know, there was a lot of no dummies, you know, nothing artificial in those first.
So how long was the idea that you shouldn't start on either the liquid or solid food for how long?
For 6 months.
Okay,
so for the first 6 months.
Okay.
And New Zealand adopted that quite early. Yeah. And I think almost all your hospitals were baby-friendly by 2005.
Okay.
So, which is awesome. In other words, there's a lot of support. Not all the staff obviously have as much training on breastfeeding as we would like, perhaps. And they're awesome staff. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. They do their thing.
Yeah.
So you might hear a lot of misinformation, you know, still about feeding 4-hourly or you know, your baby's crying, therefore your milk can't be good enough. That sort of thing that happens.
Yeah.
You know, whereas babies cry. Hmm. Babies love to suck. Yes. It's as long as they're growing, you know, check the baby out.
Yeah.
So I find that the New Zealand position is very supportive.
Okay.
On the other hand, New Zealand is the world's biggest exporter of formula. So there must be people with vested interests who would like us not to be so good at breastfeeding.
They want to sell overseas. Or there's a market overseas which they're prepared to sell.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, we do hear of a lot of it going to China, don't we?
Mm.
Yeah. I must say, when the milk bank first started, we did have some offers from a formula company to
process it,
to fund us, but it just felt too much like
then they'll go on to their formula,
Or they'll say, you know, we're so supportive of breastfeeding and here's our formula. We are not allowed to actually take, lactation consultants are not allowed to take funding from formula companies, certain, most pump manufacturers, bottle manufacturers. It's just such a conflict of interest. And that's fine. I mean, it's for when you need it.
Yeah.
We're not saying they're terrible products, but they have been overused. It's like you broke your leg and you were in a wheelchair for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen. But if you started using formula too early, you could well be on formula for the rest of time, because it's so hard to get breastfeeding back.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Would it be normal then for your babies, they start off on the breast, and then rather than going straight on to solids and other foods, they would have a period on formula?
Physiologically, it doesn't have to happen that way, but society-wise, it tends to happen. And I heard once that formula companies love breastfeeding mothers, because they always want the best for their babies, so they will go onto formula instead of cow's milk. It's fine. But no one needs to ever use formula. I mean, sorry, let me rephrase that. If you are successfully breastfeeding, you never need to go onto formula. You can just keep breastfeeding until the baby's fully on solids.
Yeah. I suppose you haven't seen enough of a timescale, but with more mothers who are career-based mothers who take short time out of work and then go back to work, is that having a big effect on the extent of breastfeeding?
This is something that I found quite interesting, that the New Zealand mums seem to have a good maternity leave. Can be up to a year.
Up to a year, yes.
And by that time, you know, baby feeding is well established. Whatever's happened has happened.
So really, it's the first year that's important. I know breastfeeding for 2, 3, 4 years.
Sure, it gets easier. You know, in the early days, it's the only food your baby has, and then from about 6 months, then your baby's getting some solid food.
Yes.
And funny enough, and I don't know how to describe it without drawing the graph. Your milk supply increases sort of arithmetically until
linearly,
is it? Thank you.
Yes.
till the baby's about 4 weeks, and then it's the same volume for another 6 months.
Okay.
So because the milk changes as the baby grows.
And then the baby gets hungrier and hungrier and more incentive to go on to
other food. Baby can go longer periods, and then at about 6 months he'll start showing interest in food, like reaching for things and salivating and being able to sit upright. There's various clues that tell you when baby's ready.
Yeah.
And then obviously weaning has started and the mum's supply starts dropping, and she can still keep feeding for a couple of years if that's her choice.
Okay. Now, the mother's supply starts drop. Even if she carries on breastfeeding, the supply will tail off.
There's always a final tail off once you start putting solid foods in.
Because the baby's...
Oh, in terms of the baby's demand. If the baby's demand goes down, then the production volume goes down.
Yes, exactly. It's very much a supply and demand thing.
Okay.
So that's why...
Which is how you can get donors if they keep on...
If they keep on pumping. We've had a few donors who have pumped for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
It's not often.
Yeah.
It gets to be a drag, I should think.
Yeah.
But often it's working mums who are pumping anyway for their baby. They just pump a wee bit more.
Yeah.
We've had some, it's not a competition, but we did have an amazing woman who gave us 757 litres. But the average is about 8. She was, whatever it was, 100 times, more than the average. She was very unusual.
Now, I don't want to draw parallels with dairy cattle, but what production of milk might a mother expect?
Well, if she's feeding her own baby and not pumping at all, she would make, after 4 weeks, a litre a day, roughly.
Yeah.
If she was feeding twins, she'd be making 2 litres a day.
I was going to say, with twins, that...
Then she'd be feeding more, yes.
So, that'd be quite a demand on the body, is it?
Amazingly, your enzymes, your hormonal systems just seem to protect you. You get more out of your food. And hopefully you don't need to eat a lot more. They've always said, which sounds disgusting, a peanut butter sandwich and a glass of milk is enough to cover your daily extra nutrition needs. Now, I don't know many people who love peanut butter sandwiches and a cup of milk, but that's the equivalent of what you would need.
Yeah.
So your body's more efficient. Mm. At getting the stuff out of
the milk. Is it easier for, I know often with giving birth, sort of mothers can put on weight through the pregnancy and so on. Is it easier to lose weight by breastfeeding?
Some people would say not, because it's easy to keep eating what you were eating. They do say that breastfeeding, obviously eating a good diet, is the one way to shift thigh fat.
Okay.
But
yes.
I've known a lot of people who have not shifted any weight. Sadly, it might help, but it's that's what Mrs. Cavewoman would have expected, but... Sadly, yes. Mrs.
With the foods we have these days, exactly that.
We still have stone age babies, but we have modern age mums, sadly.
Yeah.
And in fact, really sadly, obesity is one of the things that prevents a good milk supply from building up. Mm-hmm. And generally, the population.
Do you have any idea why?
I haven't delved into it deeply, but I think it does change your hormonal pattern. So, and maybe there's even an element of not wanting to show your body because you don't like it, so you're not so free
reluctant.
With
your reluctance.
Might have an element of that, but I think there is a huge hormonal component.
Okay.
I should have looked that up previously.
So your skinny, almost anorexic mothers might be more productive.
we wouldn't want anyone to be anorexic, you can be quite skinny, like in Africa. They were breastfeeding their babies.
Yes.
It's not ideal. We wouldn't want anyone to go on a starvation diet.
No.
Some
people are automatically a light belt.
But that
doesn't mean that they're not able to produce enough milk.
Exactly. There's weird and wonderful reasons for not having enough milk.
Yeah.
But I think most of it is to do with management in those first few days.
Okay.
And it could be the hospital being so kind and saying, you just sleep, dear, we'll give you a bottle of donor milk.
Yes,
Whereas, sadly, they should be feeding and feeding and feeding all through the first couple of nights.
Okay. Yeah. Because the initial milk's quite different anyway, isn't it?
Yes, that colostrum.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really special. It's four times as rich in antibodies, so it's just the most
brilliant. And you can't get donor milk for that, presumably?
Occasionally, the mums have pumped some colostrum, and they give us these little syringes, and I just mix it back into their early milk.
So you mean before birth they can?
They can.
Okay. So it's their own
colostrum.
And you're involved in that? Is that that's part of the things that the...
No, the mums... I say, we need donors... I don't actually often have to say that.
Yeah.
And then the donor will come and she says, oh, I've got a few syringes of colostrum that I expressed antenatally.
Okay.
So it's like a little safety net that moms choose to do.
Is this something that's common?
It's a newish thing, especially with diabetic moms.
Okay.
Whose
babies, so how early can you start doing that?
You can start producing colostrum at about early 20 weeks of gestation, but small volumes, and they don't recommend pumping. It's the nipple stimulation can bring on labour in sensitive mums, so they don't recommend starting it really till about the late 35-36 weeks.
Okay.
So you got
a few weeks.
A few weeks where you and if you go overdue, then you've got those extra couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And the mums carry it to the hospital with them just in case they they have an emergency C-section, separated from their baby. At least their baby's got some food right there. And in most cases, that doesn't happen. So then they've got these lovely syringes of golden yellow deliciousness.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And that's something relatively new. Is it getting widely accepted, understood?
It's very much accepted. The midwives are very good at mentioning it.
Okay.
It was new to me when I came in 2015. Yeah. So, and I think it was new-ish in the world, probably had been going a bit. And good for the mums. And it teaches them to hand express their milk, which is also a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're at time again. We have been talking to Jackie Nutt. Very interesting things. A lot that I didn't know. I mean, although I've got several children and grandchildren, but a lot of this is new stuff that's come in recent decades, really.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
That's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.